Support for this podcast of The Exchange is brought to you by the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity. And from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit DartmouthHitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire Republicans have done pretty well holding on to the legislature in recent years, but the governor's office has largely eluded them. For more than a decade, a Democrat has sat in that coveted top seat, and since 1992, Republicans have only held the office for 7 years, compared to the Democrats' 17 years. But now the GOP is feeling hopeful again, with incumbent Democrat Maggie Hassan leaving to run for U.S. Senate, and several experienced Republican politicians vying for the party's gubernatorial nomination. However, the Democrats will be competing just as vigorously to hold on to that office. So far, two contenders have launched serious campaigns. And among all these candidates, we're already hearing some stark differences on several key issues, from the opioid addiction crisis to public education to Medicaid expansion to the state's energy future. Today in The Exchange, we gauge the governor's race, and let's hear from you. How will you judge these candidates? What will you ask them about as they start appearing at events around the state? Let's hear from you now. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests are John DeStazo, political reporter for WMUR and a longtime observer of New Hampshire politics. And John, nice to see you. Thanks for being here.
Morning, Laura. Thank you for having me here.
Also with us, Gary Reno, State House reporter for the New Hampshire Union Leader and Sunday News. And Gary, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you.
And Dean Spiliotis is here, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at SNHU, author of the website, nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, welcome back.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, and I want to start with all of you on this same question, but Dean, you first.
Sure.
Why have Republicans had such a hard time winning the governor's office? You know, when people think about New Hampshire, they think either it's a purple state or it's a state that leans Republican. And yet, looking at the numbers, Republicans have had a hard time getting that governor's seat.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. You know, there have been some demographic changes. I know Andy Smith and Dante Scala over at UNH have done some research on this and written about it a bit, and that the state has kind of been net trending Democratic over the last 15 years or so. So even though we sort of traditionally have been seen as kind of a purple state or maybe slightly right of center, if you look going back to about 2000 until now, sort of the net kind of increase in enrollments has leaned Democratic a little bit. I think you also have a number of several elections, 2006, which was the Democratic tsunami, the reaction to President Bush on the wars and on the economy. 2008 and 2012, you had big Democratic majorities for Barack Obama. And then in those in-between years, you've had, you know, pretty tenacious governors, John Lynch, Maggie Hassan, hold on to their seats, you know, sort of fairly kind of moderate bipartisan campaigns for governor. And so just the combination of sort of demographic change, big electoral margins for Democrats of presidential years, and a couple of governors who sort of kind of did well in that sort of moderate bipartisan mold, they've been able to hold on as a result.
John, you've been watching this for a long time. What do you think? Why have Republicans had such a hard time winning
the
New Hampshire governor's office?
I agree with what Dean has said. I think also a factor is if you look at the Democrats who have been elected over the years, they've been sort of moderate Democrats.
Gene Shaheen, John Lynch.
Many Republicans might say less so with Governor Hassan. But the taxes are still a big issue in New Hampshire. And once Democrats started taking the so-called pledge, right, it sort of opened the door. If you go back to the early days when Democrats were losing, a lot of them were proposing income taxes and or sales tax. Gene Shaheen did that once. She won anyway. but mostly it was just something that was a non sequitur for Democrats. So I think that's part of it, that overarching issue. And I agree, the state's changed. I mean, look at the presidential elections. Democrats have won New Hampshire all along, pretty much, for quite some time now.
Although Republicans haven't had too hard a time, Gary, mostly hanging on to the legislature. I mean, there have been a couple years where Democrats have controlled one house or the other or both.
Well, it's been swinging with the election. In the presidential years, where Democrats have taken over or at least won one of the houses. And then on the off year, the Republicans take it over again. I think there's another thing here that we in terms of the governors. And one of them is basically who the Republicans have been putting up. I mean, if we look at Jean Shaheen, when she first got elected, it was Ovid LaMontagne. And if we look at Maggie Hassan, when she first got elected, it was Ovid LaMontagne. I mean, and Ovid's a nice guy, and I think he's probably a friend to all of ours here because he's a really nice individual. But he's probably a little more conservative than most of New Hampshire. And, you know, and it that makes a big difference, I think. And then if you look at when Governor Lynch got elected, he was running against Craig Benson, who was very unpopular after 2 years in office.
Well, and that's looking back again at some of these past races, John DeStazo. Yeah, Gary's right. I mean, many of these elections haven't even been close for
right.
the Republicans.
It's easy to marginalize. They just marginalized the Republicans. You know, Ovid was portrayed, and accurately or not, depending on your point of view, as quite radical. And that's been sort of the playbook for Democrats all along.
And it's worked for them.
And it's certainly worked for them. The one that came closest was John Stephen. I remember him in 2010. He came within 5 points of Lynch, and Lynch had been sort of a what term was that Lynch won? His fourth at that point?
It's easy to get mixed up, right?
Yeah.
Well, Dean, before we jump into, you know, all the candidates who are running, and it's exciting for us because there are a lot of people already jumping in.
It's a decent-sized field.
And lots of issues to cover, from Medicaid to the opioid crisis. I did want to just a little civics lesson from you, Dean, please. How is the office of governor itself in New Hampshire different from many other states? It's often called a weak governorship.
Sure. Yeah, you do hear that. Well, first of all, it's a 2-year term, which is a little bit unusual. Most governorships are 4 years. Some are term limited around the country. Some are not. But ours is not term limited, but you only get 2 years. So it changes the dynamic a little bit in the sense that you're always running for re-election, much like a member of the U.S. House of Representatives or our own state legislature. The other thing we often hear about is the governor does have the executive council. I think that's really the only one of its kind in the country. I think maybe Massachusetts has some version of it, but it doesn't have the impact of our executive council. And in fact, you know, we have two people running for governor, one on each side, who are sitting members of that executive council. It's interesting. I think a number of us have watched it become an increasingly important place for people with budding political careers. It votes on all the cabinet, the you know, department nominations, judicial appointments, contracts over $10,000. It really is kind of like a governor's council. So for a combination of factors, our governorship has not been viewed as strong as some others in other parts of the country. But, you know, we have seen, you know, our governors in recent years have a fair bit of success with some pretty big items. But, yeah, there are these limitations on it.
What about the ginormous legislature, Gary? Does that hamper a governor's power or enhance it?
Well, I mean, it does both, I think. I mean, you have 400 people, so if you really want to, if you're governor and you really want to work the crowd, you can have a very big effect on it. On the other hand, if it's not your party and they're determined that they're not going to do anything to help you, then they can be very detrimental for you. But it's so large that it's, in a lot of ways, it's very hard to control.
I love your thoughts too, John, on this weak governorship concept.
Yeah, it's interesting. We do have a weak governor, I think, because of the executive council. The executive council has so much power over a lot of what the governor wants to do. And in terms of the legislature, while we have a 400-member House, we have 24 quite powerful state senators. And Gary and I have certainly seen the state Senate, detour and block governors going back. Or being sort of the fuel for a governor to get his or her agenda across.
You know, Dean mentioned that two executive counselors are running this time around.
Right.
What's a traditional springboard, John, for someone to launch a campaign for governor? Or is there one?
I don't know that there's one traditionally. I think the council, as Dean said, is emerging as one with these two gentlemen running. The Senate has, but we've had people come right out of the business community as well.
Like Craig Benson.
Such as
John Lynch.
Craig Benson, John Lynch. Gene Shaheen was a state senator. Maggie Hassan was a state senator. So it's kind of a mix, I believe.
In a small state, perhaps it's a little easier to do that. Go ahead, Gary.
We're talking about a weak governor. I mean, one of the things that New Hampshire has is you have these long terms for your department heads, your commissioners. And as a governor, you can be inheriting somebody else's commissioner for a long time. And you know, when you're changing parties, that can be a really big problem.
Yeah, we've seen that before because the governor only has a two-year term, but these commissioners
have 4 to 5 year terms.
Yeah.
And so when you change, particularly when you change parties, I mean, it's not such a big deal when you're going from Democrat to Democrat, but when you're going from Democrat to Republican to Democrat, you're inheriting an awful lot of people that aren't buying your agenda.
All right, guys. Well, I feel a little bit like the Oscars because I want to say, and the nominees are. There are a lot of names running, and we're going to dig into them in just a second. The exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. New Hampshire's gubernatorial race this year is among the top watch contests in the country, with Governor Hassan leaving the corner office to run for U.S. Senate. It's an open seat. It's led to active primaries on both sides already. We'll find out who the candidates are and what they're talking about, including education, Medicaid, energy, the opioid crisis. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. How will you judge these candidates once you start meeting them? What are you going to ask them about as they appear at events around the state in your town? 1-800-892-6477 again is our number. So lots of candidates to cover already. And John, I'll turn to you first. Some names are familiar, others less so. Give us who's running for Republicans first, John, because there's more people on that side.
Okay. Well, Republicans announced our executive counselor, Chris Sununu. I almost said John, but it's Chris Sununu. Manchester Mayor Ted Gatzis and State Rep Frank Edelblatt.
And then
we're expecting, in fact, it's a definite, that State Senator and State Senate Finance Committee Chair Jeannie Forrester of Meredith will be announcing on Wednesday in her hometown. Those are the Republicans that I know of.
What are your thoughts on this field in general, John? I mean, it's pretty early still, and this is, you know, an impressive group of folks.
Yeah, they all have certainly the background. I'm not as familiar with Mr. Edelblatt, but he has been in the House. Obviously, in terms of the challenge right now is for them to get their name recognition. Obviously, the name Sununu is very recognizable in New Hampshire, but Chris Sununu is not himself very highly known, although compared to the others, he is the most well-known. Obviously, Ted Gatzis is known in his area, and Jeannie Forrester is popular in her district. So it's to get their names statewide and to get just to put out their agenda and to get their – it's really name recognition to start.
Well, and it makes sense then that they would start relatively early because they do need to get their names out there. You know, your colleague Josh McKelvin at WMUR spoke with Executive Counselor Chris Sununu, talking to him about this issue, the challenge of establishing a reputation independent of his high-powered political family. Let's hear what Chris Sununu said about that.
People know my last name and all that, but they don't know Chris, right? That is exactly who people do have to get to know. So I'm going to take my time in going around the state. I've represented 250,000 people on the seacoast. I own one of the larger businesses up in the North Country. But there are parts of the states where I do need to go out. And the one thing I do ask people is to get to know me, get to understand the pushes and pulls, my philosophies. I try to listen to people. But at the same time, I never try to talk at people. I'm not going to convince you that I'm right and you're wrong. But I think it's important to understand where I come from, what I try to bring to the table, the experience and the leadership that I'm going to bring.
Okay, so what do you think, Dean Spiliotis? You know, Chris Sununu saying, yeah, I've got a famous name, but I'm my own man.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the challenge. Anytime you're part of a big political family like that, I think it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you have higher name recognition than you might otherwise. On the other hand, it's not unusual to kind of get lumped in with the sort of the political careers of other members of your family. And he's got, you know, two right here with his father and brother, a former U.S. senator. We just saw Jeb Bush struggle with this mightily on the campaign trail at the presidential level. It can be a real challenge. And, you know, John was talking about name recognition. And I think that right now that really is the biggest issue. I'm looking at the WMUR Granite State poll from early March, and you know, none of these candidates are have high unfavorables. Their unfavorability ratings are quite low. It's just nobody really knows who they are. So Chris Sununu, for example, 43% of the people surveyed said they don't know him. Ted Gatzis, pretty well known. He's at 53%. All the other candidates are between 75 and 85% unknown. So it's not even a question of favorable, unfavorable. It's simply that most people don't know who these politicians are.
Well, it's interesting. Again, I spent a fair bit of time on Friday listening to all these candidates talk, and one theme I kept hearing from a couple of the Republicans, Gary Reno, and we just heard from Chris Sununu, is I'm going to listen to people. Some of these Republican candidates seem to go out of their way to say, you know, I'm going to listen. I'm going to maybe work with the other side. We're going to just get stuff done.
Well, I think, you know, that's the message that has worked for most of the governors who've been successful. I'm not going to be a partisan. I'm going to work with both sides. I'm going to do what the people tell us what they think is the best, what is important to them. And it's been fairly successful in terms of the Democratic governors. I mean, if we look at the one aberration in the last few years, which was Craig Benson, I mean, this is the kind of personality he was. He wasn't listening to anybody, you know. That's just the way he was. And I think it's a way of saying we're not going to be like everybody used to be. We're going to be part of the team. We're going to be more collaborative.
It's also a way to differentiate themselves from all the noise at the presidential level, given how nasty and polarized that has become. They can just talk about New Hampshire and New Hampshire values and try to, in some sense, get a little bit of separation from all that's going on at the presidential level.
John?
I think given the results of our presidential primary, it behooves anyone running for office in New Hampshire these days to listen to people, because anyone who thinks they know the New Hampshire electorate these days doesn't understand what's going on right now. And I think that these folks do. The other thought I was going to make is Chris comes off as very laid back, which I think is a plus for him. And that's I differentiate that between his approach, just his overall approach, and that of his father and his brother, who seemed to be very intense.
Well. Speaking of listening to people, let's go to our listeners now. Again, the exchange number 1-800-892-6477. And Donna's joining us from Hudson. Hi, Donna. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Laura.
Sure.
Yes, my sense is that we need somebody with courage, somebody who's going to stand up for some broad-based taxes in this state. We need either an income or a sales tax. We can't run a modern state without these sources of revenue. We need to get money into the community college system, the university system, plus the public schools, like the janitor situation in Nashua. And also, if we did have broad-based taxes, we'd have more likelihood of getting the poor people in Nashua and Manchester out of poverty. So,
Donna, let me ask you a quick question. I'm glad you called, because we did talk about this earlier. Candidates who have adopted a broad-based sales or income tax in their campaigns have always lost, Donna. So what do you think?
I think it's the time. I think it's the timing with everything. It may have been true in the past, but if you look at, say, the janitor situation in Nashua, I think there's support for that. If you look at the community college system, the university system.
So the time has come, you think, Donna?
And, right. I think every superintendent in the school systems would want this.
Okay. And Donna, I got to cut you off in the interest of time. I do apologize. But John DeStaza, what do you think? The time has come.
Well, maybe it has. The state has moderated some. It would certainly take courage, but
as Donna says,
to sort of make yourself the sacrificial lamb or the guinea pig to see if it would work. I've yet to be convinced that New Hampshire is ready for an income tax. I think that there may have been governors who may have wanted one, you know, secretly. I'm not going to name any names, but there may have been some who wouldn't have minded proposing one, who realized what Donna's saying is true. But from a political perspective, they've just found that it's not a winner.
Donna, good to hear from you. And we'll take more of your calls in just a moment. Also, we will look at the Democrats, who's running, and then talk a lot about the issues that all these candidates are talking about, from Medicaid to the opioid crisis. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a look at who's running for governor in New Hampshire and what they're talking about. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. As these contenders try to get their names out there and attend events around the state, what will you be asking about as they come to your town? 1-800-892-6477, again, is our number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. John DeStazo's here, political reporter for WMUR. Gary Reno, statehouse reporter for the New Hampshire Union Leader and Sunday News. And Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at SNHU, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, I know you want to jump in, too, on Donna's point. She was saying she wanted to see gubernatorial candidates have what she called the courage to propose broad-based taxes.
I think, in one sense, I agree with John that it's probably not going to happen. It has not been a winner in the past. But I will say that people who want broad-based taxes can probably take heart in Bernie Sanders' big victory here in the New Hampshire primary. There's no doubt that the Democratic Party in the state has become increasingly progressive and moved to the left, as it has in a lot of other places. And so, you know, perhaps that will give enough energy and cover to a gubernatorial candidate to do that. You know, we shall see. This has been building for a long time. I remember back probably 2010, progressives were very unhappy with John Lynch, but they sort of, you know, supported him because in 2010 he ended up being – that was the Tea Party year. He was probably one of the only Democrats to actually – hold their office. So they've wanted it for a long time. I hear about it a lot from progressives in the Democratic Party. And if nothing else, they can point to Bernie Sanders as kind of a sign that maybe at least some portion of voters in the state might be ready for it. But I do think it's a tough sell.
Gary?
Well, I think it's not only broad-based taxes. I mean, the Republicans for the last few elections have been talking about no new taxes, no increase in taxes. I mean, and I think it's becoming increasingly clear to people who are around Concord a lot that no new taxes merely is a backdoor way really of shrinking government. And I mean, we see it with the highway fund, how we've had real problems with our roads. We see it with the parks, fish and game. There are real issues in state government that really need to be addressed. And they're not going to get addressed unless we are willing to raise taxes, maybe not a broad-based tax, but at least talk about raising taxes.
John, go ahead.
To what Dean said, I wrote a couple of weeks ago, I spoke with Andy Valinsky, who is a very big Bernie Sanders supporter, and some other Sanders supporters. And they're just not letting that big win on February 9th be the end of it. In fact, they've been holding – the steering committee's held at least one meeting. They're planning additional meetings. They're trying to come up with an agenda that kind of keeps the movement going in New Hampshire. And it's possible, you know, while the issue of an income tax didn't really come up, just the overall thought that the Bernie Sanders win and what it meant, what it showed about the state is going to be continued. If what they're telling me actually happens, it's going to be continued on. And there's going to be an effort to change back the Democratic Party in New Hampshire more to the left, based on the Sanders win, 60-38%.
Yeah, it's big.
You know, so maybe it won't be as moderate as it has been. Maybe, you know, the Shaheen era, I'm not saying it's over or not, but I think that's what they would like it to be.
So let's talk about the Democrats then, and what will that Bernie Sanders coalition think about the two Democrats who are running so far, Colin Van Ostern and Mark Connelly, John?
Well, I'm not sure what they would think. I didn't ask them specifically about that. But I think, again, I'm not saying that they may – my guess is they want someone who is more more of an ideologue, who just has more of the ideals that Sanders brought being put out there rather than being more careful.
Dean, do you want to jump in on that as well?
Yeah, I think that's you know, basically the case. I don't know that, you know, we're talking about the Democrats right now. We have Mark Connelly, who's a former director of the Bureau of Securities here in New Hampshire. He has an investment firm now, and Colin Van Ostern, who's on the executive council, but has sort of worked his way up in Democratic politics. He was a campaign manager for Annie Custer at one point. You know, I think they both – I have heard them both talk – in progressive terms at times, but they're also kind of sort of pro-business, and I don't think they're not you don't necessarily associate them with Bernie Sanders per se in terms of sort of demeanor and focus for the campaign. But you know, who knows? I don't see either one of them coming out necessarily in favor of a broad-based tax, and I don't quite have a read yet on sort of how the progressive wing of the Democratic Party here in the state feels about them. I'm sure I'll probably get that in the next couple of months.
Gary, do you want to jump in?
Well, I just think, I mean, the progressive wing has been quietly holding its breath and its tongue and been sucking it up, if you will, while, you know, the moderates have certainly run the party and they're looking at this as their heyday. And I think, I mean, both Colin Van Ostern and Mark Connelly are more to their liking than some of the people that have been leaders of the party, right?
Yeah. Well, and listening again to Van Ostern and Connolly, both of them talk about bringing commuter rail to New Hampshire. Both of them talk about better financing for higher education. Let's hear a little bit from Colin Van Ostern talking about a big issue for him, student debt. Here he is speaking at the We the People convention held by the New Hampshire Rebellion. That's a group that opposes big money in politics. And here's, again, Colin Van Ostern, Democrat, executive counselor, talking about his own experience with student debt.
When I went to college, I ran out of student loans my senior year. I went into the billing office and put about $30,000 in tuition and college costs on my credit card. And I graduated not just with a full set of loans, but with $30,000 in credit card debt. And I got lucky. I didn't break a leg. I didn't get sick. I didn't get laid off. If any of those things happened, I would have gone bankrupt. But I believe that the levels of debt are holding back not just the families and the individuals, but our entire economy.
Again, that's Colin Van Ostern talking about student debt, one of his key issues. John DeStazo, I have heard both Democrats talking a lot about this. Better funding for the education system.
Yeah. Again, this is a reflection of what we're hearing on the national level as well. And it is a major problem. Here we are in the state with the highest the highest percentage of debt, the highest tuition, in-state tuition. And this is a real problem in New Hampshire. And I think that it behooves all the candidates to be talking about that. And I see that Colin and Mark Connelly, they're trying to kind of take that mantle and be the leaders on that issue.
Well, again, your colleague Josh McKelvin asked Mark Connelly about that. He said, what's your top issues for this? And Mark Connelly said, education, education, education. Let's hear.
We really need to have a 21st century economy and education that matches that. So we're no longer competing with, like, say, Worcester or Boston. We're competing with Taipei or Singapore. And we need to have kids who match where the economy's going. So we have one of the highest outward migration rates in the country right now of kids in our economy, and companies are coming in and they're not finding the jobs that match, you know, we're not finding the jobs that match where those kids are going. So we need to bring them back and say, we are real. We can meet this economy.
So people tying education with the economy, with the demographic challenges New Hampshire faces. I can see you want to jump in, Gary.
Well, I think it's not just at the college level. It's also at the local level, the high schools and, the local education system. Because, you know, as we've gotten further away from Claremont, we're getting a little closer to what it was like back when the lawsuit was brought. I mean, we're getting where more and more of the impetus for the paying for the education is on the local property tax dollar and away from the state kicking in more money.
Yeah, and if you are going to run for governor as a Democrat, at the presidential level, both candidates are talking about student debt. Bernie Sanders obviously talking about free public university. Hillary Clinton talking about debt-free public university. Slight differences, but clearly a big issue for both of them. So I'm not surprised to hear both Van Ostern and Connelly talk about it. Connelly has also talked a bit, and Colin as well, about innovation. And you remember Maggie Hassan had her innovation agenda. And this kind of gets to what you were saying, Gary, about job training. And we heard from Mark Connelly that quote about, you know, not finding the right skill set in workers. So I think it's just a classic Democratic approach to how to improve the business climate in the state. You do that through education. You do it through job training.
Innovation is a word now that has been made famous in New Hampshire by Governor Hassan. And these candidates are using that word. And they've both stated the problem in your clips very, very well. Now we're only in March. It's going to be parsed. Exactly what are they going to do? How much is it going to cost? Who is it going to cost? And how are you going to pay for it? And is it okay then to tweak taxes, you know? Or that's where the people are really going to have to listen.
So
we as reporters are going to have to ask the questions.
The cost is the issue. I mean, that's the debate between Bernie and Hillary is over the cost of these competing programs.
Yeah. So education is a good issue for Democrats, John.
Issues,
but
yep.
Then when the general election comes, others will say, okay, that's fine, but how are you going to pay for it?
Well,
getting
I
back to Donna,
so.
Our caller.
Well, I think even within the primary, I mean, people – What exactly are you going to do? What is your plan? And I think Democrats want to know how you're going to pay for it, too.
Here's an email, by the way, from Jeffrey, who says, the only large group of people who still thinks our tax structure works is our legislature. Out here in the world, Jeffrey says, you can still find you can still think things should stay just as they are. But it is most people, whether they're right in the middle, think our tax structure is terrible, it's antiquated and needs to be changed. Most people out here, Jeffrey says, think a sales tax is the way to go. Jeffrey, thank you for the email. Let's go back to our callers, gentlemen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Linda's joining us from Newfields. Hi, Linda. Go ahead. You're in the air.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question concerning Chris Sununu and his recent flip-flop in support of Planned Parenthood, our state's contribution to their supporting the people of the state of New Hampshire. His recent refusal or rejection of funds to support Planned Parenthood had to do with the what's now been discredited film about Planned Parenthood.
Well, let's talk about that. Yeah, sorry to cut you off there, Linda. I apologize. But Gary did want to ask you about that. Chris Sununu has been asked about this a number of times. He's called himself a supporter of the work that Planned Parenthood does, but said he couldn't vote for the funding because of the videos.
What she is referring to is a few years ago, I think it was 4 years ago, when the executive council, then all Republican executive council, voted not to approve a Planned Parenthood contract. He was on the losing end of a 3-2 vote when the council killed the contract. And he and Ray Burton were the two votes in favor. And then this year, when a similar contract came up, this council voted it down 3-2, and he was on the winning end where he had changed his mind and he said, I can't vote for this. I think we need to have an investigation. And
that's the flip-flop that Linda talks about.
So, I mean, truthfully, he made it very difficult for himself by doing that. I think he's going to make both sides of the issue angry at him. And it's not a good. I mean, he could have very easily voted for it, and he had already the people who were pro-life already didn't like what he'd done
before. I see.
And now he's got both sides of him.
Ah, okay, not John.
Happy.
Yeah,
just that. It's true. I think Chris Sununu just needs to articulate more why he is still against funding for Planned Parenthood, given what the caller said with regard to the investigations, which are still subject to question. Obviously, you're going to find a lot of pro-life people feeling that those investigations were kind of rigged or whatever. But so I think it's an issue, like Gary said, that he needs to sort of explain a little bit further his current feeling and why he continues to be against funding, if he is, as he has, I believe, said, pro-choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, Democrats are definitely talking about this already.
Well, they're making it
a
major, major issue for him. And obviously that's what you would expect them to do that. Anytime you have a sort of what's portrayed as a flip-flop, the other side is just going to keep pounding you and pounding you on that all the way through to Election Day.
Well, Linda, thank you for the call. Go ahead, Dean.
Yeah, I mean, this has always been kind of a litmus test issue between Democrats and Republicans, and it's very easy if you either go back and forth or you try to nuance it in some way, you kind of get caught in the middle, and I think that's a little bit of the danger for him here. I mean, Democrats will hit him on it very hard. They already have. It's been an issue at the national level. particularly in the Republican presidential primary. And part of the issue here in New Hampshire was that Planned Parenthood of Northern England does not participate in that fetal tissue donation program, which was the issue with the videos. So, that's what Democrats were saying that as well. So he's in a difficult spot there, but it'll certainly be part of the larger dialogue throughout the summer.
Well, another issue that a lot of these candidates, in fact, all of these candidates are talking about, in addition to the ones we've covered, gentlemen, is the opioid crisis here in New Hampshire. And Dean, I wonder what you think. How much will you expect to hear these candidates for governor talking about their approach toward opioid addiction?
Oh, well, absolutely hear about it. It's been, one of the biggest issues in the state in the past year or so. We see all this data that suggests we have one of the most serious problems in the country, number two or number three in terms of deaths per capita, I think. For instance, Ted Gatzis has announced it as sort of, he's sort of had a back and forth with Governor Hassan about declaring an emergency for Manchester, a crisis. And he has said that it's going to be one of the things that's going to motivate him. As is true, and Gary, you and I have talked about this almost every Friday, everybody agrees there's a problem, but there are some real differences in terms of who pays for it, how to pay for it. And so, again, like with the education issue, it's going to come down to cost and how do you get the funds that are needed. But I think it'll certainly be something, everybody's in favor of solving this problem on both sides, but we're going to see some differences about how to do it.
Gary.
And Ted Gatzis has made this a central part of his campaign. It's the drug crisis. It's a drug crisis. It's a drug crisis. He's sitting there at ground zero in Manchester. Chris Sununu has also been a leader. He was one of the first people out in front criticizing the former drug czar, who's since resigned. And Chris Sununu is also trying to grab a piece of this too.
John, what are you hearing?
Well, I just was going to say this. This is now the number one. The people in New Hampshire, if you believe the WMUR Granite State polls, for years and years it was jobs and the economy were the top issue, and now it is consistently now for the past year has been this drug crisis. And I was just going to echo what Gary said. I think for Gatzis, this is his main issue, and I think he feels like he's in a position to make this sort of the fuel for his campaign. We shall see. All of them are going to talk about it.
Well, since we're talking about Manchester Mayor Ted Gatzis, here he is again speaking with your colleague, Josh McKelvin. And Josh asked him a question that I think he'll get asked a fair bit on the campaign trail, whether there's a bias against a Manchester mayor running for New Hampshire governor. Let's hear.
Well, I think people know who I am. I think a lot of people respect the decisions that I make. We may not always agree, but they know that I'm going to give you an answer on where I stand on something. And people know that we'll get things done. As I said to you, here in the city of Manchester, we've accomplished a lot. A mayor can't accomplish anything unless he has a board that supports the ideas that he brings forward. And we've done that. We've done that on various issues that people never thought we'd ever get done.
And again, John, that reflects what we were talking about earlier. These candidates saying, I'm not ideological. I'm going to work with, in this case, the Board of Aldermen. Look at what I've done. I'm a practical guy.
And I think that Gatzis is going to try to be sort of the tell-it-like-it-is guy in this campaign. He sort of Chris Christie-esque in some ways, although not quite as brusque. For Gatzis, the challenge is just being a mayor doesn't usually translate into being governor. According to Secretary Gardner, the last mayor of any city to be governor was Hugh Gregg. And that's back in 1952.
Yeah. Although Gatzis was a state senator for a while.
I was just going to say, obviously Gary well knows, he's had a career as a state senator, and he was state senate president for a while, and he had mixed results and mixed reaction in that role.
All right. Well, we will follow up. I can see you guys want to jump in as well. And a couple more candidates we need to talk about after a break. Republican Frank Edelblue, a longtime businessman and a state rep, and also Jeannie Forrester jumping in later this week. So lots to talk about. And let's hear from you as well. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, so far, four Republicans and two Democrats are in the running for governor in New Hampshire. We're finding out who they are and what they've been talking about on the campaign trail. And let's hear from you this hour. What do you want to hear these gubernatorial candidates talking about as they campaign around the state? They are already getting out there trying to boost their name recognition. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, just before the break, we were talking about Ted Gatzis sort of making the case that he's a fix-it guy, a guy who can get along with both sides, working with the alderman in Manchester and so forth. And Dean, I think you wanted to jump in there.
Yeah. Well, John actually covered it towards the tail end of his comments there. I think, you know, one way that Gatzis deals with this sort of Manchester issue is by talking a bit about the fact that he was a state senator for almost 10 years. And as you mentioned, he was a Senate president as well. So he can certainly fall back on that a little bit to talk about, you know, work, getting things done and working together. So, you know, he may do some of that, but it's amazing that it was Hugh Gregg over half a century ago that he was mayor.
Well, gentlemen, we should talk about one more declared Republican candidate, lesser known, Frank Edelblue. He is a Republican state representative from the town of Wilton, a new representative, longtime businessman, though, worked in venture capital and so forth, sort of seeking out those companies and opportunities that might be successful. Here's Frank Edelblue during an interview on the program, The People's View. Here he is saying state officials need to change their attitude when it comes to worrying about the state's aging population.
Because we almost seem like, you know, we know how to do economic development if we've got a young, vibrant workforce. But then faced with an aging demographic, we say, oh, no, what are we going to do, as if it's a crisis? You know, and again, this is our reality.
That's right.
You know, and it's not a reality just in New Hampshire. It's a reality all around across the country. It's a reality around the world. And so I think there's a lot of opportunities to embrace that and use that as an economic engine to move forward in our state.
So there's Frank Edelblue, again, Republican state rep and a longtime businessman. Gary, what can you tell us about Frank Edelblue and his work at the State House?
Well, he's a first-term representative, and he was fairly quiet. I mean, most people really, when he was talking about running for governor, a lot of people in the State House were going, who's he? But he's now on the Finance Committee, so he's got a little bit higher profile. He is making the rounds, testifying on key bills, which he really didn't do at the first part of the session, I should say. But people really tend to like him and think he's got a lot of good ideas. But he certainly hasn't been in the middle of the discussion about much of the key issues at this point.
Although there is a history, as you said, John DeStazo earlier, Craig Benson and John Lynch both coming to the governor's office from the business sector.
My guess is that Frank, I don't think any of us know him very well. The one thing we do know about him is, quite honestly, he's apparently has a lot of money and is going to be a self-funder to a large degree.
Like John Lynch was.
And also he is counting on sort of the anti-establishment sentiment of the state to maybe reject these people who are really known as people who are elected, you know, even though he's in the State House, real State House fixtures. The other thing I would just note is he has working for him one of the advisors who was one of the top advisors for Ted Cruz. I'm not saying that, and who used to be a top advisor for Frank Ginta. So he's got some, what I mean is he's got some people who are going to help him put together a campaign that will be a real campaign.
Well, okay, gentlemen, this keeps coming up. You know, you talked about him having an advisor who has worked for Ted Cruz, and we keep touching on this. It's a presidential year. We can't escape it, even though we're talking about the New Hampshire governor's race. So how much does that top of the ticket, Dean, affect this New Hampshire governor's race?
Oh, I think it will absolutely have an impact. It's so, you know, the governor is the second race listed on the ballot typically. You know, we can look at other presidential years where, you know, when presidents have good margins here, the governors also often from the same party have good margins. But just to connect it in with Frank Edelblue, you know, we mentioned that he's not well known. And in that WMUR poll of the six people polled, he is by far the least known. He's at 85% of people had no opinion on him. So he's got his work cut out for him. As you know, we mentioned John mentioned Ted Cruz. He does come out of the kind of liberty wing of the Republican Party. He's been endorsed by the Liberty Caucus, and the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance gave him an A rating, and the House Republican Alliance has him like at 90%. So he really does, as John said, tap into the sort of either a Donald Trump or Ted Cruz who did well in that Liberty Caucus back last October here in New Hampshire. He's coming out of that part of the party, so there may be certainly some room for him there.
Did you want to jump in, Gary, too, on the idea of the top of the ticket? John DeStazo, I'm going to ask you about this. You wrote recently about the Trump factor in this race. But go ahead, Gary.
Well, I think it's huge at the top of the ticket. It's going to make the governor's race might be a little bit more insulated than some of them, as well as the U.S. Senate race. But as you go down the ticket, it becomes very, very important. Because so many people, as you get down the ticket, they have no idea who these people are. And, you know, and if they've been impressed with the top name, be it Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or whomever, and they go down, well, there's going to be voting for Democrats or Republicans, depending on which way they want.
Go ahead, John.
Well, as I was going to say, we spoke earlier about how the Bernie Sanders supporters are going to try to have their group, have their movement trickle down into the rest of the ticket. I don't know of any organized effort on that part by the Trump organization, although there might be. It's just going to be very interesting to see what effect, if Donald Trump is the nominee, what effect that's going to have on the ticket. The Democrats feel that it's going to be great for them, the Democrats. The fact they had that so-called news conference last week where they had a Trump Sununu mock sign. On the other hand, maybe they should be careful what they wish for, because there's a lot of enthusiasm. So real quick, does a candidate such as whoever's the nominee for governor or, for instance, Senator Ayotte, I know we're not talking about the Senate race, but Senator Ayotte, do they run away from Trump? Do they embrace Trump? Do they tolerate Trump? How do they actually deal with this? And where's the upside for them and where's the downside? They're going to alienate people whichever way they go.
Sure, because Trump did get a lot of votes here in New Hampshire.
He won by a 2-1 margin, didn't he? So,
well, let's take another call, gentlemen. Again, we're talking about the New Hampshire governor's race today in the exchange. Lots to talk about, lots of issues, and lots of politics, as we're hearing. 1-800-892-6477, again, is our number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Steve's joining us from Nottingham. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're in the air.
Good morning. I have three comments. Number one, I love the fact that I'm a senior citizen, and someone sees us as an asset rather than a liability.
Oh, just that Frank Edelblue sound we just played. Good for you, Steve, yeah.
Okay, number two, I hope, well, one of the things that drives me crazy is people say one of the problems of working with government in a democracy is government keeps on changing. But the point being is that we elect a governor every 2 years. From my point of view, that's ridiculous. You can't get anything going in 2 years except to run again for re-election, like in the House.
Well, let's talk about that. We talked about the 2-year term earlier. Dean, do you want to jump in?
Sure. This issue of, you know, it's funny. This goes all the way back to the founding. There's an extended discussion at the federal convention about how long to make the various terms of office. You know, should the presidency be 8 years long or 2 years long? And they sort of, it's kind of like the Goldilocks. You know, this one is it Goldilocks. this is too short. This is too long. The sense out there has been, you know, that historically 4 years is a good length of a term. That if you do it in 2 years, there's not enough time for the individual to establish themselves in office and get things done. You're constantly running for re-election. You know, I think that's in some sense a fair criticism. On the other hand, I think if we go back to the early 1800s here, I think the governor was like a one-year term.
Yes.
So actually, we're doing better than we were back in the 19th century. But this is, like I said, this is a debate that goes back to the founding. What's the appropriate amount of time so that somebody can get stuff done without getting too comfortable and sticking around too long? They were obviously worried back then about the potential of another kind of monarch or somebody seizing power. But yeah, I think 2 years, it would be interesting to experiment and see what 4 years here would be like, but it really feels like it's kind of part of the political culture here, and I don't know how you would change that.
Well, Steve, I'm glad you called. I have had Gary Reno governors privately say to me, yeah, this 2-year thing is a big pain.
It is. And I mean, and we have had almost every session, we have at least one bill introduced or constitutional proposed constitutional amendment introduced to make it a 4-year term. And every time it goes down, people in the House say, we run every 2 years. He's running. She's running every 2 years. So, I mean, the only way we're ever going to change this is have a constitutional convention and bring it out that way, I'm sure.
Well, glad you called, Steve. Again, you can give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. So, guys, lots of issues that we've talked about. The opioid crisis, education, and so forth. We haven't talked yet, John DeStazo, about Medicaid expansion. And again, I'm hearing these candidates talk a lot about it. How are they going to sort of sort through this question of Medicaid expansion and the broader issue of Obamacare?
Well, again, it's an interesting question because the state of New Hampshire, it's an issue that has helped a lot of people. You know, like it or not, Obamacare has brought in 40,000 people onto the rolls. So in terms of actually parsing it, we're going to have to see how the two sides come to some agreement on this. Gary would probably have more specific detail on that than I would. But again, this is something that's a major issue. All we hear about from the federal level and the presidential level is repeal and replace on the one side, and on the other side, how great it's been. So it's going to be an issue here in the governor's race for sure.
Well, it has to be an issue in the governor's race because if it passes this issue, which I think everybody expects it will do, it's a 2-year extension. So that means that the next governor is going to have to decide whether they're going to extend it beyond that. So it's going to be a huge issue in the governor's race. It's going to be a huge issue in the state Senate races and the representative races because it's only a 2-year window. And here we go again.
Well, we should talk in the couple minutes we have left, guys, about those candidates who are still in the wings. And it's almost April 1st, so they might want to get going there. Jeannie Forrester, John DeStazo, is jumping in on Wednesday.
Wednesday, right. And as I said, she's going to try to portray herself as, to the right of Gatsis and Sununu. I think that she, you know, obviously she's a woman. So there's a unique a Republican woman running for governor is not it's not something that's common. And she's going to have she has a very good strategist working for her and Michael Dennehy. So it's going to be a real campaign. She's been thinking about this since last fall. I know that I spoke with her in September of last year and she was thinking about it. So that's one. And then on the Democratic side, you have since Stephanie Shaheen decided not to run, you have former Mayor of Portsmouth Steve Marchand, who's sort of a no-labels guy. He's sort of very much in the middle. He's thinking seriously of running, too.
So he's in that mold of the Gene Shaheen, John Lynch type of Democrat?
Steve was going to run for the U.S. Senate in 2008, but then he stepped back when Gene Shaheen announced. He was, in fact, he had begun a campaign in 2008. But when Gene Shaheen announced, he withdrew and he backed Gene Shaheen. And it's interesting now, you know, Stephanie Shaheen was the one that everyone on the Democratic side was watching in terms of running for governor. She decided not to run. And so now seems to be moving toward it. I haven't heard a final word yet. But.
Okay. Well, you heard it here first, folks. And so,
well, he
go
did
ahead.
Say that. He has said that he's, I mean, he's been quoted as saying that he's very seriously thinking of running.
Well, in talking about these family ties and so on, it's also very interesting that Jeannie Forrester actually worked for John H. Sununu for a while, right. And now she's running against his son. So it's a small state in a lot
of ways. Wow. Well, and I think that Steve Marchand worked for a past gubernatorial candidate.
Mark Fernald,
thank you, who ran on an income tax
right,
platform.
Right, and it was kind of weird. Even back then, I remember saying, Steve, why are you, you know, you're a very moderate. Why are you working for a guy who's proposing an income tax? And, you know, he had his reasons, but Mark was the last, candidate for governor even to propose an income tax. And it was at that point where I remember a former chair, Kathy Sullivan, said no more, you know, if she has anything to do with it, she can't tell anybody what to run on and what not to run on. But if we as Democrats are going to be successful in the governor's seat, again, we have to have a platform of no broad-based taxes.
Yeah, although that was a long time ago, before the Bernie Sanders
over 10 years ago,
success.
It was over 10 years ago. You know, Steve Marchand comes out of the management consulting world. You'd probably hear a lot of the similar talk to the other Democrats about job training and innovation and those sorts of technology and those sorts of issues. You know, one other person that MUR polled was Jeb Bradley, Republican state senator, well-known leader in the Senate. I don't have any particular insight about whether or not he's going to run. I don't know if he said no for sure.
But he's told me that he's not going to run.
So he's not likely going to run. But he had been someone who was also mentioned. So it sounds like probably won't, though. But he has been kind of in the mix.
Sure. I've seen his name on some
polls,
of those polls as well. Here's a real interesting question from Stephen in Sanborn. And Stephen, thank you. He says, how might the governor's race affect the makeup of the executive council? If Van Ostern loses to Connolly in the primary, because Van Ostern's on the council, or Sununu loses to Gatsis, could they still run for the council? That is one of these perennial questions that comes up, for example, like when Rand Paul ran for president. He had to decide what
change
to do.
Change the rules. Yeah, no, you got them to change the
Kentucky.
Rules in Kentucky.
So how does that work, Gary?
You can't be running for both of those seats.
You can't?
No. No, you can only run for one seat like that. There was a law passed, I don't know, quite a while ago, because we had people. It was mostly to do with conflicting kind of positions, and you had people running for two different things, and then somebody wins both seats, then what do you do? And they ended up passing a law saying you can't do this. So, I mean, and frankly, these two districts are probably not going to change the party affiliation, because the second district is largely Democratic, and you'd have to be a really, really strange situation for a Democrat not to win that, with Keene, Concord, and the Seacoast.
Yeah, it's a swath.
It's a swath right through.
Right.
It was kind of gerrymandered. The thought was to contain the Democrats into one district, although they do have a second.
And the District 3 was changed, if you will, gerrymandered, to include more Republicans than it used to have, because it was kind of a swing district. And it's not anymore. It's very much a Republican district.
Interesting. So, Stephen, to answer your question, no, they can't run for both offices. But Gary seems to be saying that even if they got booted off the council or voted out of the council, that those seats would remain in the same party hands. So, wow, guys, so much to talk about, and probably more to talk about once a couple of these other candidates jump in. Thank you all very much for being here. John DeStazo, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks for inviting me.
John DeStazo, political reporter for WMUR, longtime observer of New Hampshire politics. Gary, always good to see you. Thank you.
You're welcome, Laura.
Gary Reno, State House reporter for the New Hampshire Union Leader and Sunday News. And Dean, we'll see you on Friday for the News Roundup.
Yes, you will. Thanks, Laura.
Dean Spiliota, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at SNHU, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Mikesell, with help from Jessica Hunt. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.